Ready for your next big revenue leap? Stoke RGA helps $75 million plus manufacturers uncover hidden gaps, align teams, and scale what's working. Our clients don't just grow, they lead. Learn more at StokeRGA.com.
Welcome to New Manufacturing Insights, the official podcast of Insight Publications and the Northeast Wisconsin Manufacturing Alliance. I'm your co-host, Ann Franz, Executive Director of NUMA, and I'm pleased to be joined, as always, by my awesome, fabulous, beautiful, lovely host,
insert
Kate Bronze.
Insert adjective here. I like it.
Manufacturing Editor at Insight.
Thank you, Ann. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Mm-hmm. And this episode is sponsored by Stoke RGA, a revenue growth accelerator built for scale and backed by execution. Learn more at StokeRGA.com.
Our guest today on New Manufacturing Insights is Brian Licari, the Chief Operating Officer of Allwyn Manufacturing in Green Bay. But that's just the latest stop on his 35-year career journey in international business and manufacturing. He's been a great friend over the years in terms of just thank you for all your support over the years.
It's been a very good relationship.
Thank you. And we are so happy to have him share his insights with us today on the podcast. Brian, welcome to New Manufacturing Insights.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So it's my first time meeting Brian. So start off by telling us a little bit about your career journey and how you first got into manufacturing, and did you imagine it would be your career?
So to be in manufacturing, let's say, I always knew I wanted to build things.
Yeah.
Even as a small child, I remember, it's funny to talk about on Sesame Street, they used to have these little clips where they'd show them building. So I always wanted to build things.
Yeah, those were great segments.
That was I knew that right from the beginning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when I was a senior in high school, people were wrestling with wanting to be engineers or whatever they wanted to do. And my autos teacher actually said, you know, Ryan, you don't really seem like you like to work with your hands. You like to build things, and you don't seem like you really want to go and spend 4 years studying about physics and calculus. So he suggested the industrial technology degree at Northern Michigan University. And he said it's a four-year degree. You're going to learn about robots. You're going to learn about practical applications of what you need to survive in the world. And that's really how I got started down the path of getting into real manufacturing. And at the time, manufacturing careers are being discouraged by just about everybody else in education. I mean, my actual counselors basically said, if you're not going to be a lawyer or a teacher or an accountant, you're never going to amount to anything, and you don't want to end up in manufacturing because it's dirty and disgusting. And he was really the only person that really encouraged us. And there were a couple of us that went in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Anne wouldn't be sitting here with a job if they hadn't been discouraging that for all those years. Right?
That's true.
Right.
Another thing we have in common is I'm an NMU grad. So that was a great experience.
And you worked in my hometown.
Yes, Ishpeming.
Yes.
Yes, I used to work at the Ishpeming Nagani Chamber of Commerce. Can you imagine answering the phone that way, Ishpeming Nagani Chamber of Commerce? So Allwyn Manufacturing has been in business since 1928. Wow, a remarkable milestone. What do you think has allowed the company to remain successful for nearly a century while so many manufacturers have come and gone?
So it's interesting. So we have Allwyn Manufacturing, and then we have Palmer Fixture, which is a subdivision of Allwyn Manufacturing. So Palmer is actually over 100 years old.
Wow.
Both companies have survived just through adapting to the times and innovation. So Palmer Fixture was, people in modern think machining fixtures. It was actually bathroom fixtures or restroom fixtures. And then everything was made out of brass and steel and, you know, chrome plated. And even your hand towel dispensers were made out of steel. Allwyn was one of the first to really adapt going to plastics, figuring out how to make it faster, cheaper, how it would, you know, apply out in the world. There's some things they talk about when you're in a restroom now, and they have the mega rolls when you sit down. They were one of the first companies to actually embrace that technology. And, you know, I kind of chuckle because it's not really a technology. It's just an evolution. And they've always really tried to stay on the forefront of what their customers wanted or needed.
I see 1928, and my ears perk up. So are you going to be there in 2 years to plan the party, or do you have a centennial celebration?
Unless the owner really gets mad at me, I have every intention of being there. But
will I be invited?
Of course.
Sounds good. Hey, 100 years is a really big deal.
Wow.
And it is. We're very excited about it.
Yeah, no, that's cool. That's really cool. So people may not realize that Alwyn designs, engineers, molds, assembles, and manufactures the product all under one roof, right?
All under one umbrella. We have four facilities in Wisconsin, manufacturing facilities, an R&D facility in Wisconsin, and then our electromechanical assemblies are all done at our Vietnam facility.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I guess you do still have a lot of in-house capabilities, though.
100%.
Pretty diverse. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How does that create value, I guess, translate back to your customers?
So, again, under the Alwyn umbrella, we have Palmer Fixture, we own Deluxe Plastics, we own Hapco Elmer, which would essentially be anything plastic in your hotel room. We own LaCrosse Brush, which is color-coded brushes for the food service industry. So, our vertical integration, we have engineers that primarily design our products. And ironically, you think, okay, how advanced can a hand towel dispenser be? Well, when you start looking at the amount of noise it makes, the number of parts that are in it, the cost of it, we control it cradle to grave. Mm-hmm. And so we have companies that come and just buy our technology and we design the entire dispenser. We have companies that want our mechanical units that we call them the mechanisms that go into their industrial design because they want a certain look to their hand towel dispenser or their toilet paper dispenser. But we can also sell our excess capacity via Deluxe Plastics. So we have customers that come to us and just say, make me this, and they're all set and we can run with it. Or we can help them actually design their tools, make it a little more efficient. We can also rapid prototype. So at Alwyn, we have two rapid prototype machines. We have a rapid prototype machine shop. So if somebody comes in, we can print them something, do some simple machining on it. We also have 3D scanning capability that if you were to literally bring me that pen, I could take it, scan it, and I could produce a 3D model for you. Mm-hmm. So, and that goes back to why we've been around for 98 years, is we're continually staying in front of it and never really saying, okay, we reached the top, it's over. Mm-hmm. We're always reaching for something else.
Mm-hmm. So colleagues have said that you really value continuous improvement and empowering your employees. So how has your leadership style evolved over the years?
So my style evolved. It really started to evolve when I was a partner in Ace Manufacturing. And my business partner wanted to know who he was getting into business with and sent me to an industrial psychologist. Robert Young, who's down in Milwaukee, there's your plug, Robert. I haven't seen him in 20-something years, but and he really helped me understand first myself, and then he also helped me understand that people don't process information the same way, they don't receive information the same way, and he really taught me to step back and not be so excitable, and really to allow people, give them guidance, but have them grow on their own. Mm-hmm. And I remember him telling me there's going to be some times when he said, six of one, a half a dozen of another, do it their way. Let them feel ownership. He said it might even be a 60-40 split. Do it their way, and they're going to eventually come around to the better answer. Mm-hmm. So what you would see at Alwyn hanging from the ceilings, it says every day we get a little bit better. And that's all we're after. We just, you know, we starting the podcast, we talked about the Brewers. Mm-hmm. I tell all my employees, you want to be the MLB player who hits a single every single time you get the bat. You never want a home run. You never want a triple. Occasionally, you might get a double. But if you just focus on the singles, if you did that, you're going to be in the Hall of Fame and you're going to be the most sought-after player in the world. So it says it all over the facility, just a little bit better. And then we also emphasize to our employees that just because we've stopped using your idea, the reason we had your idea is that gave somebody else an idea to get better. So be very proud. We might have only used it for a week, but as I mentioned earlier, people process differently, and if it's a visual person, they go, oh, I saw you did this, then they make a change. Because we have had people get discouraged, they'll say, you know, I gave you my idea, and we're not even doing it anymore. And you sit down, you talk with them, and just go, you know what, you really are the reason that the next five things happened. Right. So empowering people and giving them the time to develop is probably the biggest thing in my leadership style.
Yeah, I really like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, my people who report to me might see that differently, but
we'll have them on next week.
That would be perfect. I will give you their names. You can kind of do a point counterpoint.
So I think we talked about this a little bit too. There are career defining moments. Can you talk about maybe one or two that were pivotal in your evolution on your leadership style?
In my career, there's one defining year. When I first started working for Miller Fluid Power in 1990, Miller Fluid Power, nice American name. Yeah, the Millers. Well, we were owned by CKD of Japan. Mm-hmm. So we had two Japanese people on staff, Go Sugura and Nao Yamada, who I didn't directly report to, but they were actually running the company. So I had kind of an interesting, a very unique experience. Mm-hmm. I had two Japanese people who grew up in manufacturing post-World War II, studying Deming, studying just-in-time, studying Toyota, and their thought process. And then I had my American bosses who grew up in the 60s and 70s and knew utilization, efficiency, doesn't matter if you need it, make it as fast as you can, make it as cheap as you can. And there was just this colliding of thoughts. And the way the Japanese looked at it really made sense, especially when you start looking at waste and taking waste out of the system and utilizing your assets and cash flow and everything else. And I decided in within the first 18 months that I couldn't have people like that above me making decisions for my life, because I'd be working for failing companies for the rest of my life. So as I moved around, I knew I wanted to, at that time, just get into middle management where I could have some say. Never did I in my wildest dreams think I would be. Right now I'm the COO, I've been the CEO. I never ever thought I would open companies in Japan or in China. That never crossed my mind. I just did not want people with that kind of vision leading me and controlling my life. Mm-hmm. And then back to the philosophy, it really gets into the industrial psychologist that we already talked about. Yeah. That was years later to sit down and say, okay, mm-hmm. you have to really adapt the way you look at people.
Mm-hmm. So manufacturing has changed dramatically during your career.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Point in, taken. So what's one change that has surprised you the most, and what change do you think is still ahead?
So this is interesting, because the younger people are going to think, wow, this old guy's just not with it. But I remember I put my first robot in 1995, and there was no feedback. It was just all hard programmed. And I remember thinking there has to be a better way. Well, then in 1998, 99, we put the first robotic cell. So it started off with just a robot, then it was a robotic cell, and I was with a company called Engineered Machined Products up in Escanaba, Michigan. And we had four lathes being run by a gantry robot, and we had a very, very simplistic vision system. We thought that was just so cool. Now here we are, 2026, and I look at vision systems, and I am just thoroughly amazed at what they can do, what they can comprehend, and how they've really streamlined automation. And, you know, I think back to the days when we had fixture belts and everything that we were trying to do with hardware. And I kind of think the kids nowadays coming out of school got it easy, because the vision systems are just so smart. So that's been the biggest evolution, I would say. Mm-hmm. And you're talking to somebody, when I started, we didn't have CNC. We had NC. It was numerical control. You still had paper tapes. So mm-hmm. that would be the biggest thing I've seen, the biggest effect in the last few years, taking AI out of the equation.
Mm-hmm. And then what do you see in the next 5 years, the biggest change?
The biggest change is going to be, I wrestle with the AI question, because this isn't my quote, but I read it someplace, where AI is taking smart people and making them geniuses, taking mediocre people and making them look smart, and taking the village idiot and making them look like they actually know what they're talking about. So I think AI has huge potential in the next 5 years if people with the proper foundation use it to accelerate their craft. People who don't have the basics are going to use it, they're going to think they know what they're doing, and you just don't get good results from it. Mm-hmm. The best example I could give you is, I have people who make presentations to me periodically. They want to buy something, want to change something, and it's happened now twice where they've given me a very nice PowerPoint, and at the end they have a summary. And I will just, and you can tell when you read something now, if it's AI, and I will literally just say, okay, explain it to me like I'm in kindergarten, and they get a blank look on their face, and I say, well, it's right there, it's mm-hmm. on the screen. Mm-hmm. And I say, yes, I can read, I can sound out the big words, I'm good at that. But if you could explain it to me like I'm in kindergarten, and on one occasion it was just flat dead, they had no idea. So they wanted me to spend money, but they could not themselves explain what a chatbot mm-hmm. or whatever the heck it was gave them. So mm-hmm. that's kind of the scary part about AI.
Mm-hmm. It is really mm-hmm. scary, actually. I'm sufficiently terrified for today.
Yes.
So we always conclude our show with, what is your best leadership insight?
My best leadership insight, I mentioned coming in here, I've been thinking about it. And what I have done in mentoring a lot of people is, I always say, when you have your protege coming up, you want to find out, to identify your protege, first of all, you want to find out if it's a job or their career. And if it's just their job, I hate to say it, I'm not going to spend time investing on them because they're going to go sell cars down the street if they're going to make more money at it. You, as a leader, you need to identify the people below you that this is their career and they want to perfect their craft and they really want to get better at what they do. So I tell everybody that I'm mentoring, you know, find the people that this is their career. Mm-hmm. I give examples of years ago when I would interview mechanical engineers and I would always ask them, what are you passionate about? They'd go, I'm a mechanical engineer. And I'd say, okay, what are you passionate about? I went to Michigan Tech. I'd go, great. What are you passionate about? And they'd say, I don't understand. And I would just say, you have your degree, but if you're not passionate about cars or bikes or even a garbage can, I don't know, you're never going to have any passion to make things better. You're just going to do what your boss told you to do, and you're never going to really bring it to the next level. So when we'd look for mechanical engineers, they'd be like, you know what? I really like machining things, and they were really going to be great fixture designers. So as a leader, as if there's a future leader out there, you have to identify the people that they're passionate about what they want to be doing. It's their career, not a job.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brian LeCurry, it has been such a pleasure having you on today's episode. Thank you for joining us on New Manufacturing Insights.
This has been a lot of fun.
Well, that is going to do it for this week's episode. As always, we would like to thank Woodward Community Media for production support and Stoke RGA for their awesome year-long sponsorship. Mm-hmm. New Manufacturing Insights is released every Thursday, everywhere you listen to podcasts. Thank you in advance for subscribing and supporting the show. Until next week, everyone.
Bye.